This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Let's get right to it. Let's not waste any more of her time. Barbara Lowe Fisher is the co-founder of the National Vaccine Information Center. It's online at nvic.org. And it's an honor to welcome her back to the program. Barbara, how are you?
I'm just great. How are you?
Very good. No complaints. 6 feet above ground, that's a great day.
That's for sure.
I'm happy to be here. Barbara, we wanted to have you on this hour to talk in some detail about the new swine flu vaccine, which most people have heard about. It's out there. We know it's coming. But there's a whole lot more going on behind the scenes, and there's a lot of information that hasn't been released yet in wide release, and we want to talk and get your thoughts about this, because the day is fast approaching when the government looks at parents and says, okay, line your kids up, they need to get this swine flu vaccine. So we need some more information. But before we get to that, remind us again the origins of the National Vaccine Information Center and how you yourself got introduced to this whole idea of vaccine safety.
Okay, well, I'm the mother of a son who was injured by a vaccine in 1980. He suffered a brain injury, was left with multiple learning disabilities and attention deficit disorder. And I joined with other parents in the spring of 1982 and founded an organization that's now known as the National Vaccine Information Center, nonprofit, educational, pro-informed consent. And we advocate that everyone has the right to have full information about the complications of infectious diseases, the complications of vaccines, and that we should be allowed to make an informed voluntary choice about the vaccines that we use. So, we're an information clearinghouse, and I've continued to do this for almost 30 years because I feel very strongly that the public is not given enough accurate information about vaccines and even about infectious diseases. And I think that the current situation we're in is an excellent example. We're not getting all the information we need from our government health agencies. I think that the reaction of our government, frankly, to this outbreak of H1N1 swine flu influenza that was first identified outside a pig farm in Mexico in April, and within a few weeks the World Health Organization had declared a global emergency, and the Centers for Disease Control and the Department of Homeland Security in this country on April 26th declared a national public health emergency. And what we've seen really with this influenza outbreak is that it is no more serious in terms of symptoms of the flu than the regular influenza that goes around every year. The symptoms are a mild fever, runny nose, a cough, sometimes there's gastrointestinal, the vomiting and diarrhea. But chills, fatigue. But it's basically most people get through it after a week and a half, and they have then antibodies to the H1N1 swine flu virus, and they go on their way. There have been in this country, as of I think a couple of weeks ago, 43,000 lab-confirmed cases of H1N1 swine flu, about 5,000 hospitalizations, and about 300 deaths in this country. And then worldwide, about 800 deaths. Now, if you the regular flu that goes around every year, the CDC says is associated with 36,000 deaths. So this kind of puts things into perspective in terms of just how serious this virus is. And the CDC has stated as of July 23 that this virus is not mutating. It is stable. And there is really no indication that it is going to mutate. It has the possibility to and become more serious, but at this point it is stable.
But doesn't any flu have the possibility to mutate and become more dangerous?
Absolutely. Any virus has the ability to recombine with other viruses, which is the case here. This is a human swine bird hybrid virus, as I said, that was identified near a pig farm in Mexico initially. And I think that, as other people have pointed out, I mean, there are certainly strains of influenza, like the Spanish flu that went around in 1918, which is really the most severe pandemic that we've seen in the 20th or 21st centuries, 1918. It is actually a relative. That strain is, this strain that's going around now is a relative of that original 1918 strain. Now, that pandemic caused about 500,000 deaths in the United States. There were between 40 and 100 million people worldwide that were thought to have had complications and died from that flu. That was about a 2.5% mortality rate. We've had several other lesser pandemics. One occurred in 1957, the Asian flu. That reportedly killed about 68,000 Americans. And in 1968, the Hong Kong flu was associated with the deaths of about 34,000 Americans. Now, what a lot of people don't realize is that every year in the flu season, what actually goes around that causes flu-like respiratory illness, only 20% of that flu-like illness is actually type A or type B influenza. And I think a lot of people think that when they get sick in the winter and they've got the cough and the runny nose and they have to stay home for a couple of days and all this, that that's influenza. But most of it is caused by viruses and bacteria that are not type A or type B influenza. And, of course, type A and type B influenza strains are the ones that are contained in the annual influenza vaccines.
So 80% of those folks don't have the flu, even though they get real sick and they get flu-like symptoms.
Correct.
We're talking with Barbara Lowe Fisher. She is the co-founder of the National Vaccine Information Center online at invic.org. And it was her courageous leadership back in the 1980s as a mother, joining with other parents, that helped to create and pass the National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act of 1986. So, Barbara, if this swine flu thing is no more dangerous and perhaps even less dangerous than the normal flu, what in the world is all of this scare stuff? Is this just a media thing, the big media crisis, the next crisis du jour that, you know, something's going to kill you, something's going to kill you, and this week it's the swine flu, and what's going on? Where is this coming from?
I think it's the politics, unfortunately. I have come to the conclusion. You know, the World Health Organization and the federal, both the Department of Health and Human Services in this country, as well as we have a new player, the Department of Homeland Security. This idea that any infectious disease outbreak is a matter of national or international security is an idea that kind of got going after 9/11. September 11, 2001 changed everything in this country with regard to public health laws at the federal and state level. And that is because people became very afraid of bioterrorism attacks. And the Congress responded to this fear that terrorists had weaponized smallpox, anthrax, and other weaponized microorganisms. And under in the name of protecting national security, they passed a series of laws at the federal level. And at the state level, there was a Model State Health Emergency Powers Act that went through many of the states, rewriting the public health laws at the state level. Well, what people who had an agenda prior to 9/11 did, and that is the pharmaceutical companies in this country that make vaccines, and public health officials who are very committed to eradicating all infectious microorganisms with the mass use of vaccines, they convinced Congress to insert language that covered natural disease outbreaks. Well, that, of course, covers influenza. And what this legislation did, including the Homeland Security Act of 2002 that created the Department of Homeland Security, which is now the third largest federal agency in the U.S. government with more than 200,000 employees, that department, as well as DHHS, they shielded the companies from liability in Project BioShield legislation that was passed in 2004 and 2006. And they created something called the Emergency Use Authorization that could be invoked whenever a national public health emergency is declared. Well, as I said, there is a national public health emergency that was declared on April 26th. This allowed the drug companies to fast-track experimental swine flu vaccines and to press the government, the FDA, to quickly license what is now unlicensed oil and water adjuvants that they've been trying to get licensed for 60 years. They want to put these oil and water squalene-like adjuvants in the vaccines because it allows them to produce more doses of vaccine. They don't have to use as much antigen in the vaccine. It allows them to get a higher, produce more doses that they can adjuvant. That means make the vaccine more potent. What an adjuvant does is it ramps up the immune system to mount a hyper response that will produce more antibodies. But these squalene oil and water adjuvants haven't been licensed in this country for a good reason. In lab animals, they cause autoimmunity. And so I think that the FDA has tried to keep them out of the vaccines because they're concerned. Now, the oil and water adjuvants have been used in Europe in some flu vaccines, but they've never been licensed here. And so what we're waiting, the manufacturers want, is they want the HHS to invoke the EUA, the Emergency Use Authorization, so they can bring these unlicensed adjuvants in and get them in under an emergency, you know, while we're in a state of emergency. We have stated that we're opposed to this fast-tracking. We do not think these adjuvants should bypass normal FDA standards for proof of safety and efficacy. We also, our organization, has opposed the school-based vaccination programs using swine flu vaccine because there are no safety mechanisms in the school systems for safely administering vaccines, experimental H1N1 vaccines, that are only going to be tested a few weeks on a couple of hundred healthy adults and children before they're made available to be used by children.
We're talking with Barbara Lowe Fisher of the National Vaccine Information Center. You can learn a whole lot more online at nvic.org about the swine flu vaccine. So, Barbara, let's back up for a minute here. This is just mind-blowing to me. And so sad. I mean, it's just so sad that stuff like this goes on in this country. How big pharma and these pharmaceutical companies can basically get legislation written, you know, the government forces us to buy their product that isn't even tested and we don't even know if it's safe. Explain to us how that actually works, that the pharmaceutical industry has such control to write this legislation and rush it through.
Well, see, this is the situation. All of this was done between 2002, early 2002, and about 2006-07. This legislation that Congress passed, because the pharmaceutical company is the largest lobby on Capitol Hill, and they got in there and got what was supposed to be bioterrorism legislation. They got this natural disease outbreak language in there, and then they pressed for liability protection if any of their experimental products were used during a public health emergency.
So they're going to experiment on us and our kids.
Well, I mean, it is what it is. That's why NVIC has been so out front in criticizing this fast-tracking of these vaccines for what is really, at this point, not a true public health emergency. I mean, it's one thing to be prepared. It's another thing to be purchasing millions of doses of this vaccine before it's even been produced, plus millions, 119 million doses of the adjuvant that has never been approved, and say that we're going to test for a couple of weeks on healthy children and adults, but we're going to give it to every child, whether they're sick or not, whether they're healthy or whether they've got chronic immune and brain system disorders, which a whole lot of our kids have now. You know, 1 in 6 child learning disabled, 1 in 9 with asthma, 1 in 100 to 150 with autism, 1 in 450 has diabetes. We have a lot of children who don't fit into the healthy category, but they'll be lined up with everybody else. How is the vaccine going to react in them? And what MVIC is concerned about is, are parents going to be informed when those vaccine days are going to occur? Are there going to be personnel there? They're going to write down the manufacturer's name and lot number, keep a permanent record of every vaccine given, and enter that into the child's medical record. Are they going to monitor these children for adverse events, serious health problems?
They don't do any of that stuff, Barbara.
They won't. And see, the National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act that I worked on in the 80s, all of those things I just said, that's part of federal law. Anybody who gives vaccines is supposed to obey those safety provisions. And here we're going to have schools with people injecting kids with vaccines that have only been tested a couple of weeks. And who's going to know what they got, how to follow them up, how to make a report to the federal, vaccine adverse event reporting system if they do have a problem? I mean, who is going to be doing this? We don't think that there's anyone who's going to be doing this and that it's unsafe.
Yeah, and you know what's going to happen? Because we've been there. You and I have both been there. Countless families across this country are going to have sick kids waking up in the middle of the night, having all these strange problems. And they're going to be like, I don't know. I don't know what's going on. I don't know what to do with my child. They're going to have sick kids as a result of this untested or barely tested vaccine that's being pushed through for a crisis that does not exist. We're talking with Barbara Lowe Fisher of the National Vaccine Information Center, NVIC.org. And Barbara, stay with us. We're going to take a quick break here for local news and weather, and we're going to continue this conversation in just a few minutes. And we invite you to join the discussion at 977-1070.
Everybody get on your feet. You make me nervous when you're in your seat.
38 minutes after 5 o'clock. This is Charlottesville right now. I'm Coy Barefoot. Hope you're doing well. Happy Little Friday.
That can't be beat. We barefootin'.
Let's rejoin our conversation with Barbara Lowe Fisher, co-founder of the National Vaccine Information Center. It's online at nvic.org. We're talking about the swine flu vaccine and the collusion, Barbara, really, how else do you put this, between the pharmaceutical industry and the folks who write our laws. Tell me more about how the pharmaceutical industry got normal sickness, just a regular old flu. This swine flu is no dangerous than the regular flu. Turned into some, we treat it now like it's bioterrorism.
Well, indeed. I mean, they had the help of certainly the public health officials who ideologically are very committed to preventing all infection, all infectious disease. I mean, all of it, with the mass use of vaccines. That's why we've seen the tripling of the numbers of doses of vaccines that our kids are recommended to get by government in the last quarter century. So we had people who both wanted to produce the vaccines and make money off it, as well as folks who really believed that children should not have any experience with infection at all, which may not really be biologically a good idea. But at any rate, the laws in this country are federal as well as state. And the federal government in public health is supposed to prevent the entrance into this country from other countries of individuals who have communicable diseases, certain communicable diseases. Then they're also in charge of preventing the spread between the states, the spread of a disease over crossing state borders. And the state governors are responsible for within the borders of the state helping to prevent the spread of certain communicable diseases. Influenza that can cause a pandemic is on that list. So what is different since 9/11 because of this federal legislation is very interesting what Congress has done, because they created this Department of Homeland Security. They also went in and they really modified the Posse Comitatus Act of 1878 and the Insurrection Act, which was passed also in the 1800s. And for the first time, they put the U.S. Coast Guard in times of peace under the Department of Homeland Security. Therefore, now the U.S. Coast Guard can be called out by the Director of Homeland Security to enforce public health emergency laws. They also, in 2007, in a defense authorization bill, over the objections from all 50 state governors, modified the Insurrection Act of 1807 to allow the president to federalize the National Guard troops and use them in the states under federal control to respond to a epidemic or a serious public health emergency whenever the president determines that the state can't handle it. So prior to 2007, the National Guard had always been only under the authority of the governors. This kind of had a separation between the military powers belonging to the president and the federal government and the military power belonging to the states. It was a check and balance, I think. So a lot has changed. There's a lot more power, police power, in the hands of both the Department of Health and Human Services and this new Department of Homeland Security. Now, in the states, after 911, this Model State Health Emergency Powers Act was promoted by the CDC. They had given a lot of money to somebody prior to 911 to draft this Model State Health Emergency Powers Act for the states that would rewrite public health laws in the states. After 911 occurred, it was quickly brought out. It went like lightning through the states, and it gave more police power to state public health officials. So whenever the governor declares a state of emergency, and a lot of governors have already done that since April 26th, it means that if necessary, if they so choose, they can use the police powers to enter your home, inspect your home without your consent, decide if you need to be quarantined, decide if you need to be vaccinated. There, even in Massachusetts, there's language that they can invoke that would prohibit free assembly of citizens, which, of course, has been a right under the U.S. Constitution since we were founded as a nation. So this is really serious stuff.
So, Barbara, if I hear you right, it is now legal in this country, perfectly legal, for a governor or the president or even the director of the Homeland Security to call out some type of troops, whether it's the National Guard or the Coast Guard, to come into my home and get my kids and take them somewhere and give them a shot, even if I don't want them to?
Legally, they could do that if they wanted to, if they choose to do that. Now, the reason that National Vaccine Information Center has been so outspoken since April about all of this is because we know that these laws have been passed, and a lot of people don't understand that there is this expanded police power. And what we're hoping is that cooler heads will prevail, that the Department of Homeland Security and the Department of Defense, who are very much now a player, whereas before 911 it was only Department of Health and Human Services, that this sort of folks that have more of a military bent will not be leading this parade, will not be the ones who are ultimately making the decision, and that cooler heads will prevail, and they will not be foolish enough to take a very oppressive stance on, particularly this on something that is clearly not as serious as. And if we were talking about Ebola, or we were talking about pneumonic plague, or we were talking about something that could kill somebody within 24 hours if they were, you know, most people, that's a whole different situation. A whole different situation. But in this situation, where you have what basically is like a run-of-the-mill flu, you need to operate with restraint and use with restraint the powers that you've been given. And, you know, as families...
But the pharmaceutical company, what's so alarming is that the big pharma is treating this regular old flu, swine flu, that the media created into some crisis, but no more dangerous than the regular flu. The pharmaceutical companies are treating this like this is a national emergency.
Well, of course, the government gave them $1 billion in April to fast-track five companies to fast-track this swine flu vaccine. So very much the companies are doing this at the request of the federal agencies, Department of Homeland Security and Department of Health and Human Services. Now, I think it's great to be prepared, but I think it's questionable to continually hype and make people afraid of a flu that right now is no more serious than the regular influenza, and in order to create market. And that's really part of what I feel is going on. They're trying to create a market for the vaccines that the companies are producing. You know, so, I mean, if this virus mutates into a very serious form, that's another situation. A lot of people are going to want the vaccine. Some people are not going to want the vaccine. Whatever happens.
But it hasn't mutated. That's the point.
No, it has not. It is stable at this point. It is not mutated.
And the regular flus.
And that has been acknowledged by the CDC.
And the regular flus that come around every year, those haven't mutated either.
Well, I mean, every year different strains are, are out, are more prevalent than others or more dominant than others, and that's why the CDC has, the FDA have to predict what strains are going to actually come around, but often they don't predict right, and so sometimes the flu vaccine has no relationship, the strains that are in it have has no relationship to what goes around.
And Barbara, let me ask you this, because this is something that folks like you and I and many others who've taken the time to study the long arc of this, because this is just the latest manifestation of something that's been going on for quite some time, and that is the collusion of the pharmaceutical industry with the federal government and supposed regulators. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on that? Because this has been going on for a long time. When they get in there and they write laws and have influence, undue influence, and they have a product that they can get the government to require us to buy when we really don't need it.
For sure, we need to have some kind of law that prohibits the pharmaceutical companies from having so much influence in the regulatory process in the health agencies, the federal health agencies, and in the policymaking process. You know, drug companies reps shouldn't be sitting at those advisory committee tables. They really shouldn't. They should be coming forward and telling the government about their product and what proof of safety and efficacy they have for a product that they want licensed. But they certainly shouldn't be sitting there making policy or being very much involved in the operation of government. It's a private enterprise, and yes, you're right. When vaccines are mandated, it creates a stable market for a pharmaceutical company, and there is very little liability now attached to these vaccines. And whenever they harm a child, then you have to go through this compensation program. Why is that true? Because that 1986 law that I worked on, what happened back in the early 1980s was the companies went to the Congress and they said, we are going to stop making vaccines. We're going to leave the country without any vaccines if you do not pass legislation that protects us from liability. The Congress came to us and we were a brand new organization back in the early 80s. And remember, there were no fax machines, no cell phones, no personal computers, and no internet. You can imagine what the circumstances we worked under. They came to us and they said, look, we are going to protect the vaccine supply in this country. You can either come to the table and fight for what you think is right for the families or not, but we are going to do it. We're going to pass this legislation. So we came to the table as young parents and we did the best we could. But in the end, we could not stop the protection that Congress and the drug companies were insisting on. And what we did get is we got a protection to go to a lawsuit. If you're turned down for federal compensation or offered too little, you can go to lawsuit and get punitive damages if you can prove that the companies engaged in criminal fraud or gross negligence in the manufacture of their product, or if they could have made a safer product. So we still have access to the tort system, but it's much more difficult to sue in a non-emergency. In an emergency, there is absolutely no liability, no access to any court, and there's no compensation. So these swine flu vaccines, if you're hurt, you are out of luck.
Barbara Lowe Fisher is the co-founder of the National Vaccine Information Center. It's online at invic.org, and we're honored to have her on the program. So, Barbara, at the end of the day, what's a parent to do? I mean, starts coming down the pike and we start hearing more news about, the swine flu vaccine and you better get your kids vaccinated and it's vaccine day at school and they're going to start jabbing them and they start telling you that pregnant women and babies, you better get this swine flu vaccine and,
Well, they need to make sure they contact their legislators and say, we want home quarantine if we're going to be quarantined, and we want the right to say yes or no to these vaccines. We don't want to be forced into it. And I'd like to say that we are having a huge vaccine conference, the 4th International Public Conference on Vaccination, here in the nation's capital, October 2 through 4, 2009. And we are going to be doing advocacy training to teach parents how they can go into their communities and fight for the right to make vaccine choices. We have more than 35 speakers coming from around the world, including bioethicists who are going to stand up and talk about the right to informed consent. So it's an important event, and I hope that as many people as possible can come. In the meantime, you need to be aware of the laws in your states. You need to talk as a family about what you're going to do if the knock comes on the door where people are saying to you, you either get vaccinated or you're quarantined. You need to have some backup supplies in your house in case you have a quarantine for a week, phone numbers of people you can call who can bring supplies to you, drop them on your doorstep, because, you know, quarantine is quarantine. And, you need to have the over-the-counter medicines or the vitamins or the supplements, whatever you have, in order to get through that week if one or more of you become sick and they say, oh, you know, you got to be quarantined. Because I don't think they're going to be playing around this time. They have the power now, and it's just a matter of how much power are they going to exercise.
A company goes to our government and helps to write laws and throws their weight around and gets the government to require us to buy their products, and that product is not altogether proven safe, effective, tested, and it. What's more alarming is the product is, headed for our children first, our children and our babies,
and pregnant women. They're going to vaccinate pregnant women and children first, and we're very concerned about these oil and water adjuvants. We pray that they do not fast-track these and insert these into these vaccines. And if they do, they have to let people know, because, literally, if someone has autoimmunity or has a sensitive immune system, this could really be bad for them.
Barbara Lowe Fisher is the co-founder of the National Vaccine Information Center, and you can reach her online at nvic.org, nvic.org. This interview will be podcast at SevillePodcast.com. Barbara, it's always a great honor to have you on the program. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, and I'll talk to you soon.
Absolutely.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SevillePodcast.com for more.